When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are ready to rewind this episode of 48, talking about our outwit, outplay, and outlast moments of the episode, but using past episodes and past moments to relate to 48. So I'm excited to dive into this episode. We've got a lot of good old school feels, I think, to this episode here. It felt a little bit more old school with some of the challenges and some of the, you know, tree mails and things going on.
I think we're at an interesting point in 48, because overall, I kind of mentioned it earlier on in the season, I feel 48 is kind of has these old school vibes to it. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it a lot more, obviously, when we get to a tribal council where we have Chrissy saying, hey, all the big dudes are running the show. And there's all this conversation about morals and integrity versus playing the game and all that, right? I it has the old school vibe, like maybe not a Borneo vibe, but it does kind of fall into like an Africa realm through like probably like Pearl Islands, I would say, is kind of like where it's sitting right now in the feels of it. Now, there are some pretty good seasons of Survivor in that stretch, and I don't think this is really hitting those highs by any means, but it's becoming interesting because this is something we haven't really seen in a long time, this kind of a regression in Survivor strategy. And I feel bad calling it a regression because it feels more like it's cyclical. And it feels like we're kind of getting around to, we have to, because I think we do have that, right? I think we saw a reemergence of that in the 20s with like Boston Rob and in Redemption Island into like the family in South Pacific and the Women's Alliance in One World, right? Like we see this every, like it's cyclical sometimes, and then it kind of evolves to, you know, then we go, okay, we're not so alliance heavy, we're in voting blocks and things like that. So it'd be interesting to see how things evolve. McKenna, I just want to get your thoughts on this episode as a whole, because it's been a very divisive episode across the internet so far this week. A lot of different reactions to a lot of different moments in this season. So I just want to get your general feel for how you felt this episode was.
It was good. I enjoyed this episode. I liked watching it a lot. I feel like I was definitely more glued to my TV and watching the episode than taking notes and trying to find out, you know, what to do for the podcast. And it's tough because I liked a lot. I like both sides of many coins. I love Joe and Eva. I also love Chrissy. David and Mary's relationship is really interesting, but so is Kyle and Camilla's. So I find myself less on a side of a fence, and that's really interesting. I'm like pulling for both sides and kind of happy at outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I understand what you're saying.
You know, like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm sad that Chrissy went, but it makes sense. You know, like I would have loved to see more of her, but I understand why she went. And I would have been sad if Camilla went, because it's like, well, now what happens, you know? Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I feel similarly. Like overall, I think I was a little disappointed in this episode, and I think it comes down to this is the first episode in a long time I felt the editing starting to let us down on this season. And a lot of it comes to the fact that Star's just absent in this season, episode.
Yes.
What's that all about? Star is a phenomenal character. We were saying it earlier in the season.
Also loses her vote and we don't get more confessionals about it.
Yeah, and there's no real discussion about why it's specifically Star they're targeting, because logically, based on the idea that, you know, Camilla wants to switch these votes onto these strong guys and get one of the strong guys out, it doesn't make sense to get rid of Star's vote, because that is an important one to have those numbers. So
I think that's just the easiest person that they can control getting a red ball in that the way that they were going, because it was Mitch, then Camilla, then Star.
Sure. But I mean, we will talk about that entire journey a little later on, but they just, it feels like we're just missing pieces in the edit. Like, we can make the assumption, oh, David and Mary must have gotten close on that swap tribe, but we didn't see it, right? And it feels really weird after we've been commending the editors so much for the last couple of seasons at like showing relationships, making us know the story, setting things up for the future, that this was a little lacking in that. But that being said, there was a half hour of this episode that I thought was just top tier Survivor. Once we got to the point where Camilla's name gets out there, I was off to the races. Like there was a chance Camilla was going home. And unfortunately, we didn't really see the fight. We didn't see, and this is again where I feel the edit was a little lacking, because we didn't see how we got anywhere close to a unanimous Chrissy boot out instead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, let's dive into our outwit portion of the episode. We are talking alliance disagreements for votes within the alliance. So we obviously this episode we have Kyle and David going at each other. One wants Chrissy, one wants Camilla, and they're both supposed to be in this alliance. Then Joe kind of gets involved. Mary's more vocal. Eva's just kind of there for a little bit of it. She puts in her opinion, but it's mainly the focus is Kyle and David butting heads on Camilla versus Chrissy. And that brings us into Tony wanting to get LJ out, but Trish is like, no, we can't do LJ yet. What about Cliff?
This is such an interesting aspect of Kageyan, because obviously this is post-swap in Kageyan, hence why, you know, LJ is on a tribe with these bronze. Mm-hmm. But if you remember this swap, Trish and LJ were starting to get really close, right? Yes. They had that Massachusetts connection and they were just talking about it a lot. And it concerned Tony. It concerned Tony because Trish is number one. There were concerns there. So Tony kind of wants to get rid of LJ so he can have Trish to himself. And now, obviously, we know later on in that season, Tony and LJ are able to work very closely together until Tony eventually does flip on LJ. But it's so fascinating because this is the point where you're at, and I think what's more interesting about this situation in comparison to 48 is Trish is advocating for Tony to keep the person who is swapped, who is new in the tribe because of how useful he can be moving forward, and getting rid of someone they've been on a tribe with since the beginning of the game in Cliff, who Trish at that point is viewing as a threat. And obviously this comes after the swap. So preceding this was the attempted throw to vote to get Cliff out of the game already.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, it's such a fascinating thing when we compare it to 48, because I think this push, like the push we see from Kyle to get, David off of Camilla is so similar to what Trish is doing here, but it's almost, and it's a little weird because the way he's pushing it is still someone he's been on a tribe with the entire time, or like started the game on, I should say. God, obviously there was the swap where they weren't on the same tribe, but because of that, it just, it puts this little wrench of complication to it, but this is the same type of advocacy we're seeing of someone who has made a connection, and like, these should be red flags for everyone around mm-hmm. them, because that is what Trish was doing. Like, yes, Trish made this connection with LJ that Tony was concerned about, and he should be concerned about it because it could literally alter his game. But ultimately, Trish is the person who is able to push that vote back.
Yeah. What's interesting is also, like, Trish is connecting with the new person in LJ, where we have David connecting with a new person in Mary, where, you know, Mary could be that easy vote. She has no connections. All of Siva is gone, and it's just her left. So David is protecting her, just like Kyle is protecting Camilla. So it's just strange that they can't just be like, oh, you have someone you're protecting, I have someone I'm protecting, let's just shake and agree that we'll go at it later. But it's almost a little bit different in Kageyan, where it's like they have this other option in Cliff, where nobody was really aligned with him that they in the core, but you had people that you could bring into the core, like Wu, who mm-hmm. was drawn to Cliff. So, like, Cliff was one of these big power players in the game that could bring more people to you, where instead they're trying to, like, chop off people's extras.
Yeah, we're at a fascinating part in 48 where where the players have to start thinking about that, because it does seem like, and obviously this goes into what Jeff has kind of been saying all season about this season being a season of pairs, but this is the time, this is kind of the crucial moment where you're setting up the end game in 48. And that moment just came earlier in Kageyan. And it really ended up Trish's insistence to keep LJ here ends up benefiting Tony so much in this season. So it's fascinating. And I think it really goes to show, when it comes to 48 and we have Kyle and we have David and Joe all kind of like trying to push their own agendas here to keep their partners safe and everything, pushing someone for you might actually end up benefiting someone else instead because of who it leaves available in the future.
Yeah. We also see a little bit of pushback here in China when we get to Courtney and John Robert and Todd and Jamie as well, where Courtney has been wanting to get John Robert out for a while and is really kind of pushing this to Todd and Amanda and being like, we have to get John Robert out. Like, he is making me uncomfortable. And also, he sucks. And he is like snoring and loud and just like not great to be around. And Todd's like, no, it has to be Jamie.
Yeah, this situation is similar in that we have Todd, like Courtney being very insistent that it has to be a particular person, much like Mary is insistent that it has to be Camilla. And Todd is kind of playing this. Todd's less so. It's interesting because Todd isn't taking into consideration Courtney's feelings here and is instead really pushing on to like this idea that John Robert is just such a better number for him. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's a little different. Like, obviously Kyle is in a similar situation to Todd where he obviously wants to keep Camilla because Camilla is his number one. I don't think John Robert is ever Todd's number one, but Todd realizes the utility in having John Robert in the game still, rather than, again, kind of like giving the other side an opportunity to kind of regroup and make things work a little and have that fear that someone from your alliance will eventually switch over to them by keeping, you know, Jamie and Eric and Frosty all in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's
PG, I guess she's there too.
This one is interesting because it's like keeping someone within Fei Long versus voting out someone from Jean Hu, where both were original same tribe in 48. So I also think it's strange here because, like, Loggy, Siva, Vula. Okay, Siva. No, Vula.
Yes, it was Siva.
Vula.
Okay. The Lumina tribe?
The orange tribe is Vula.
No, that's Siva. It's okay.
Okay. Anyhow, that they didn't keep strong like Fei Long did here.
Mm-hmm.
And this was their shot at going for a Loggy.
Yeah, it is very interesting because it kind of comes into, I think it's one of those interesting conversations that happens in Survivor when a tribe that manages to remain mostly intact gets to the merge. And obviously, like, we've seen Charity go from this group already, but there's still five of them. They still have the most numbers out of any singular big starting tribe. It's that question of when you have to cannibalize yourself. And what's the purpose of cannibalizing yourself? And we see, like, there's that little bit of insistence of, hey, this is our time. Like, there's still five of us. We can control this vote. We can do it. But they can't all get on the same page because, well, I mean, three of them are already gone. Three of them are already off working with other people. And that's the difference between this and China. Because China is that idea of, okay, yes, is Jean Robert kind of miserable to be around? 100%. But this is, if we start cannibalizing ourselves now, it gives an opportunity for us just to start this infighting before it's necessary to do so.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on to outplay. We are talking about social strategy games. So social strategy games. Because this game that they played on the journey was 21 Flags meets Coconut Drop, the way that they decided to play it, where you can take one ball or two balls, but you just don't want to take a red ball. So the game of 21 Flags that they played in China is you want to be the tribe taking the last flag. So that's similar here, and you can take one, two, or three flags.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Coconut Chop, which is kind of how they played this with the red ball of trying to get star three red balls of, all right, so if I take one here, Camilla takes two, that leaves star having to take a red ball.
Yeah. Will made a very interesting comparison. You know, okay, I can't give all credit to everyone because everyone jumped to the exact, all we millennials are out there jumping to the same conclusion. It's like, oh, thanks for taking us back to our Mario Party 2 days, Survivor. We understand it's Honeycomb Havoc. We get it. But Will made a very good point. Will and Blake did on the recap that in Honeycomb Havoc in Mario Party 2, you are trying to be the last person standing to not get any balls. Mm-hmm. Or like the honeycomb and the bees, right? In this one, because of the change in the mechanic, whereas you want to be it's the first person to accumulate three loses. So you're not finding a winner, you're finding a loser. Very similar to like the Jenga last season, right? Where you're not trying to find a winner, you're trying to find a loser because they're going to lose their vote ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
It changes the dynamic of how a game like this works and how you can communicate. And I think that's what's really interesting when we compare it to these previous examples. And I think it's why we're able to compare it to these previous examples. Because, like you said, 21 Flags has very similar mechanics to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a tribal challenge. Yep. And it's a quite winnable challenge, too, right? Like
I think the strategy is you win if you are the first tribe. But unless you know how to redirect the flags, then you're done for if you don't know the strategy. If you're the second tribe picking flags.
Yeah, there's a very distinct way of approaching that challenge, which makes it so that when we see it in Thailand, right, it's pretty obvious who's going to win right away. And it comes down to the numbers you take to make it so that you're forcing the other people. Wait, you took the last flag and won, or you took the last flag and lost in Thailand?
Won.
I can't remember.
You won in 21 flags.
So you had to make it so that there was always at least three flags left. So if you do like go backwards, right, you have to do the math to make it so that they can never get lower that or never get an opportunity not to give you three flags at the end. So because of that, like there's a very structured way to do it. Now, what's different with this journey challenge that we see this episode is you can't plan all the way ahead because the balls come out.
Yeah, there's only a small like visible field of balls. So you can like plan ahead once you see the red ball, and then you can count how many to the red ball, or like once someone the one person in front of you goes, or somehow like you can try and navigate it, but it really is a waiting game. Like, all right, I'm gonna take two right now. I guess I'll take one, two, and then you see the red ball, and it's like, all right, so let's math this out. Both Mitch and I are on the same field here, playing like
wavelength.
There's the word. And we're gonna go for star. Shaheen's just gonna go for himself, whatever keeps him safe. So we can kind of navigate this to where Star is the target. And that's where we see a lot of the strategy of Coconut Chop, where you take out, especially if it's for immunity, you go for, you know, the person you most don't want to have immunity.
Yeah. And that's again, where I think this is an interesting challenge to have. And don't get me wrong, we did not need a 10-minute segment on this. It went commercial to commercial. It was too long. Especially because we don't see any conversation happening. And I don't know if it was within the rules that they weren't allowed to converse about strategy at all. We obviously saw the visual cues from Camilla to Mitch to get on the same page, which is something I'm going to note for later. Like the fact that they were thinking on the same wavelength, that's something I don't think we should just like.
Well, because ignore. They were trying to go for Shaheen.
Mm-hmm.
But couldn't, because once they got back to camp, there was this whole Camilla plan now.
Yes.
And so Camilla was like, I can't go for a loggy anymore. I have to protect myself. And Mitch is like, well, nobody else is on this plan anymore. So I have to jump ship too. So they were gonna work together until they got back to camp.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it plays into like that segment from the beginning of the episode where Mitch was talking about having to have more agency in the game. I think this is a setup. And I think this might be us being able to commend. This might be something we look back on in the future of this season and be like, okay, we were getting this set up because Mitch is kind of that person who we're not really sure where he fits into the game right now. I think it's very possible Camilla and Kyle end up picking him up at some point. But that social strategy of the coconut chop, right? Because that is, again, one of those things where you show who you're going after and you hope everyone else gets on the same wavelength as you.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's so fascinating because we don't get many elimination challenges in Survivor. In Survivor, a lot of our challenges are based on beating people and not eliminating people. And so when we get a challenge, like unlike other reality TV shows, right? I think a lot of other shows, Big Brother has a lot of these like elimination challenges where you're like sabotaging people. The Challenge has a lot of challenges where you're intentionally sabotaging people to get them out of a challenge. We don't get those in Survivor that often. So when they pop up, it is this anomaly. And we've kind of been missing it since they got rid of the coconut chop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it all depends like how people feel about this kind of game where it's like, oh, we hate that they targeted Star. Oh, we hate that they targeted this person in coconut chop, because it all depends on the timing of it. And the fact that it was for a lose your vote, like that also stinks too, or that it's for immunity. I like it when it's for reward because it shows people dynamics and things and who chooses who and whatnot, but there's nothing big on the line.
Yeah, but I mean, we've also talked in the past how coconut chop is one of the most important challenges we've ever had in Survivor, right? Because it completely changed the game in Marquesas, and it made people realize, like, that's what's so brilliant about this. And it's also why I think we need this, like, communication aspect in these challenges, or at least to see it if they're going to show us a 10-minute segment. I cannot harp on this
anymore. I don't know. 10 minutes of this episode. I like it.
yeah, but the problem is, I like 10 minutes spent on challenges. And so if we include this with the challenge, it's like 40 minutes of this episode is this challenge.
Great.
Essentially. Yeah, you challenge lovers can get all behind that. But I am totally okay with that when it's a visual challenge that I can follow along with.
And this but I liked it because I was getting narration from Camilla.
Right. And that did very much help. But it would have been nice.
It was just picking balls. It would have been kind of bad, but
I just feel this is the type of challenge that you can, like, is ripe for the audience to play along with, right? Like, you can do the math. The other thing that I'm unclear
no one's doing the math as the audience. No one is doing.
I watch things differently, I guess. I do all the time. When if I can participate in something, I am absolutely all in, like, trying to figure it out.
All right, go rewatch 41, Game Within a Game, participate.
That was different. That's totally different. But I lost my train of thought here for a second, but I had a point I was getting at.
Yeah, you always have a point.
I know. But it's just when we have so much time put into this and editing. Oh, right. I remember what it was. The other thing that I didn't understand about this challenge, and this is, again, another knock on editing, and it's been a while since I've gotten to, knock editing's pegs down a little bit. There was never any indication as to how this order was decided. Presumably it was random, but sometimes that is really, it's really necessary to know.
No. It is not necessary here. It is just like how in movies, do you see them always walk in and out of a door? No.
Right. However, there are implications of the order that determine how this game goes, right? And I think that's why it's important to dictate it.
I'm pretty sure it was random.
I think so too. I think we can presume that because they didn't explicitly show us.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Unlike...
I don't think we need to know that it's, all right, pick your spot. Like, I don't know. I don't think we need to know this type.
Maybe that was important. Maybe. But I guess we don't need to know. But you know where they did make some choices is in our Outlast moment, McKenna.
Yes. So Outlast, picking pairs through tree mail. We have had this before, but nobody has ever done it quite like Joe, where Joe is like, no, we're not doing this random. Not going to happen. Not flying. We're showing cards. All right. Everyone, just pick your person, whoever you want to go with, and we'll do it that way.
This is such a fascinating sequence of events. Because, first off, Tree Mail comes, and it mentions this is a new era staple. And, okay, sure. We can call it a new era staple. And I guess we have been doing this pair up, group up. Has it always been in pairs? It has always been in pairs.
Yes.
In the era, right? In Australian Survivor, we saw it with groups. I'm making that up. I feel like there was some point where I feel like there were three people competing with each other. Nope, never mind. It was 46, I believe, there were threes. But
it was probably not this challenge. It was probably...
It was a similar challenge.
I think it was a reward challenge or something like that.
Maybe. It was an elimination challenge, nonetheless. All like right. This, the sequenced elimination challenge. And that really led you and I, McKenna, to be like, wait a minute. We can think of distinct moments where we have seen this before. How often does it happen that they actually are told in tree mail to pair up? And surprisingly, a lot of the times when we get these paired challenges, they're told to pair up at the challenge itself.
I choose Colby.
Yeah.
So one of the first one we got that we're going to talk about is Australian Outback, where Jerry immediately chooses Colby right off the bat, pulls a Joe and is like, I'm showing my cards and I want Colby. And everyone else on the camp is just like, yeah, we all want Colby. Sit back. And so then they go into a randomization that Colby and Jerry wind up being together anyway, but this one is really interesting because we do have that, like, I'm going to stick my neck out and claim someone here, but there's actually pushback, and it's just like, no, we're not doing that. We're making it random.
Which, when we compare it to 48, so the sequence of 48 is very interesting because it's all narrated from Joe's perspective. We see Joe be like, no, we're gonna pick. We're not going to randomize this. We're going to pick. What we don't see is that Joe then immediately claims Eva as his partner.
Because
they didn't show it. And we find this out because Chrissy mentions in her exit press. So we get this idea of, like, this is how this happened. But so this entire sequence is out of order. It's out of order. So we don't exactly know how these pairs are going. And then it's not as revealing as Joe's confessional seems to make it be.
And we also don't get to see, like, Mitch and Star.
Star at all. Yeah.
At all. Because I'm going to, like, bounce between all of our kind of references here. We also chose Africa, where we have Brandon and Frank paired together. But in this scene in Africa, they're all, like, buddying up to their partner, and they're all, like, not getting to know each other, but, like, they're all, like, doing little things as partners. Kim Powers and Tom are big and little. Like, we got a little bit of that. It would have been interesting to bring that into 48, where you have, like, your pairs, like, you know, doing something together or whatever. And Mitch and Star being last, I would have been like, if I'm Star, I've been like, Mitch is a freaking steal, because he's been so amazing in a lot of these challenges. Though, if I'm Eva, having Joe help me through the beginning half, and then he's not going to last on that pole nearly as long as I am. I mean, clearly she won, but, like, the big boys never last that long, so have him get me all the way to the end.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, you can't account for what the last challenge is going to be in this case, like, with our new
the new era,
the new era get a grip is harder.
Also, like, this was the bucket challenge too, with Gabler's season, so it's like, well, if it was the bucket challenge, then we have David and Joe winning it.
Exactly. I think the interesting thing with all of this, though, is this entire segment, to me, at first it's like, okay, I see what Joe's doing here. But eventually it kind of came off like Q's hide and seek confessional in 46.
Okay.
When he's like talking about where everyone's hiding and what that means about their game. And it's very similar to how Joe is talking throughout this entire segment about, oh yeah, Camilla and Shaheen pick each other, so they must be working closer than I thought. And then we have that, like, you know, the juxtaposition of Kyle being like, yeah, Camilla and I are definitely not going to pick each other because we are working so closely together and everything, right? And we kind of get that egg on Joe's face right away, saying, hey, like, your reads aren't as good as you think they are. But it also plays out further where, like, again, like, we see Kyle is clearly pushing for Camilla to stay for a reason. And again, that is, I've mentioned it several times now, where the edit kind of lacks this, because we didn't really see the responses to people being like, why is Kyle pushing so hard to keep Camilla?
Yeah, and it's also really interesting to just see the reactions of the pairs. So, like, when Brandon and Frank get together, they are on polar opposite sides of life, strategy, the game, whatever you want to name, they are on the opposite sides of, and now have to work together. You have Jerry, who's all over Colby and wants Colby. Colby wants nothing to do with Jerry, and now they have to go on a date. Frank and Brandon have to go on a date. It would have been really interesting if these pairs here weren't people that they necessarily got along with. So if David and Chrissy were together as a pair and had to go on a little taco date, like, that would have been perfect, like a perfect tie-in. But they all picked their buddies. I think the only people that weren't really buddies or didn't really get along are Mitch and Star.
Maybe. I can't tell you because we haven't seen anything about
that. Right. But even Kyle and Chrissy do have, even though Kyle did vote for Chrissy, they still had some level of talkability where it wasn't strange where Kyle was like, all right, Chrissy, let's do this.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up because this is another thing that's kind of irked me about this episode of 48. Mm-hmm. And I think it really does compare to these older episodes where they are just for rewards. And they were pretty big rewards, right? Like Colby and also the emphasis on the partnership that is made in the preceding to the picking of partners is the one that wins that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened here too. In case anyone was wondering, it is telegraphed here too that one of Eva or Joe is going to win because that is the focus of who we are seeing as they're picking their pairs. But when we have Colby and Jerry go off to their Great Barrier Reef, it is where Colby breaks the law and steals part of the reef, steals some coral from the Great Barrier Reef. And then we have Frank going off to watch Out of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But here,
they just get tacos on the beach.
They get tacos, but it's not even that. It's not, my biggest complaint about this entire challenge.
Okay.
Is that I actually think the worst position you can be in is that third, like that pair eliminated from the second stage from a strategic standpoint. Because we know this is a short cycle.
Yeah.
We know that this is a 24-hour cycle. And this is right after the doubles. Like it's very clear based on Shaheen's confessional early in the episode. You have four people who, yes, one of them is losing their vote, but there are four people going off together who can talk strategy. You have another four people who not only get reward, but they also get to go off and talk to each other. And then there's just two people left in the middle who are just on the outs of everything now.
So now what is then the strategy coming into picking pairs if you get the notice ahead of time to make yourself not be that third pair? Is it the randomization and hope you get someone good? Or is it fighting for who you want to be with? Like, should this be something we use to move forward with? Like with Joe saying, call your shot? Or is it better and more cohesive for the camp? Spoiler alert, we're talking about this episode of Africa over on the Patreon. So if you want to go watch season 3, episode 10, Dinner, Movie, and a Betrayal, watch that so you can listen to us. Now, I lost my train of thought.
There's a conversation between Kim Johnson, Ethan, and Lex discussing about how we pick our people,
because the camp is in disarray. So, like, if we just do it random, then we have a calm camp. But here, they have a calm camp, and he wants to disrupt it. So is it based on how your camp is doing at the moment? And that's kind of where you lead to try and, like, pick the partners. If this is a staple, if this is something moving forward, like, that people need to know about, how do you go about picking your partner? Is it that out front being like, I want to win, or I want to get to the last stage, give me X? Or is it, I'm going to pick a number?
I am fairly certain. Not 100% certain, but I'm fairly certain this is the only time we have ever seen them pick their partners like this.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every time tribes agree to just do it randomly, to be fair.
Yep.
And one of the things that did come out actually in Chrissy's exit press was that Kyle and Mitch tried to pair off with each other.
Oh, and they went.
And Chrissy was like, that's not fair. That's not fair. Don't do that.
Okay.
So there is that little aspect of it too. So there was a little bit of discussion about who people were ending up with, and mm-hmm. the idea of like this, it's something that we kind of saw on the challenge All Stars 5, where like male-male pairs are stronger when you have mixed gender pairs as well, right? And because of that, like there was discussion about this of like, no, we can't do male-male pairs. We have even numbers of genders. Let's just like pair off that way, please. So that conversation did happen. It's very interesting, but it's something that I would have loved to have seen in the episode.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I want to see that conversation. I want to see how they come to these pairs rather than us kind of getting this smoke show of, oh, Joe's like doing this as a master manipulator. But to answer the question you posed, McKenna, I think what this comes down to and how you approach this is just how much you want to push strategy here and what strategy you want to be doing. And if you think you can properly evaluate based on who people say they want to partner up with, what their motivations are for that partnership, right? Because if you said it yourself, Mitch is beasting these challenges. If I went, if we were out there and we're like, hey, let's pair up with Mitch, is anyone batting an eye at that thinking, oh man, are they closer than we think they are?
Like, or is no, that, I want to get further in a challenge. Like,
yeah, and I think that's it goes back to Outback, right? Where, yeah, I obviously you want to be with Colby. That makes total sense. So it's just fascinating to kind of, I don't know if there's an answer to your question, really. I think it's, this is just dependent on whatever the vibes are in the tribe. Like, if someone wants to push for it, sure, go for it. Like, pair off. If you, as a Survivor player, want to go out there and push for it, do it. See what you can garner from it. Because, but just also keep in mind, there might be some confirmation bias that comes out of it. And that's only based on, like, what we're seeing. But because there are all, David was already having these suspicions that Camilla and Shaheen were getting close, and he had shared those suspicions with Joe, that we kind of get to this conclusion of, oh man, maybe these two are close. In fact, I wouldn't even be surprised if this confessional from Joe was recorded after all that conversation about how close Shaheen and Camilla were getting had happened.
Yeah, maybe. Well, thank you everyone for listening to our podcast. That is it for the rewind. So just make sure, like the video, comment, subscribe, do all the things, become a patron. And John, what is happening the rest of this week?
If you hadn't already, make sure you go back and listen to the recap, because it is Will and Blake, a combination we don't get that often. Will and Blake recapped this week's episode. Phil and Blake earlier today did Digging Deeper. They talked about this idea of playing for the $1 million, playing for entertainment. It was a very it's a very interesting conversation, definitely worth a listen to. McKenna and Kyle recapped what I'm hearing was a pretty fantastic episode of The Amazing Race this week.
Top tier.
They did that yesterday, so make sure to check that out. And Phil will be joined by the winner of Survivor China, Todd Herzog, this week for the predictions and power rankings. Definitely give that a listen to. We love having Todd on the podcast. There's no Australian Survivor anymore because McKenna, you and Phil finished that off earlier this week.
Yes, but if you want to, you know, if it's your first foray into Australian Survivor, watch this last season. It was great. You can take a look back at our content for it. But we will be prepping soon. Not soon. I mean, we still got a few months here. But for Australia versus the World. So Phil and I are really, really stoked to cover that as well for you guys this summer.
And then, you know, back to the usual next week. So recap on Wednesday after Wednesday's episode, and McKenna and I will be back here next Friday to once again rewind that episode and look at it through Survivor's past. Over on the Patreon, everything is happening as normal. Phil's continuing to watch Australian Survivor, in case that McKenna and Phil wasn't enough. Phil's continuing going. He's on Blood versus Water, which McKenna and I also covered at one point. So you check all that out on the Patreon.
Overall kind of view of the episode, every three episodes, check out Phil's recaps. If you want to really in-depth, go really in-depth into the Patreon and try and find what John and I did. Because if you're looking for a 2.5 hour podcast for every three episodes of Australian Survivor, that's where you find it.
They exist. Every Season Matter is moving on to Token Chains now, which is a lot of fun, as always. Casting Perspective, Phil and Will's Q&A, Phil's after show, which, yes, don't worry, $20 patrons. It should be going up today. Phil just had to drive back from the Ron Clark event. So it just needs a little bit of time to get it done, but that should be going up any minute now. And then us talking Survivor Africa. Make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel, and we will see you next week.
See you, everyone. Goodbye.